let you know that the deacons the other night voted to support Tom and Laura McConkie, who headed out to Yuma, Arizona. That's a church plant there, and they actually have some support out there. There are some, but not enough that he can go full time yet. So we have decided to pick them up for at least 2 years. That's the way we usually do a church plant: give them 2 years worth of support, and then we'll kind of reevaluate at that point. But you keep praying. They're there, and they'll be getting more and more involved here all the time. So you pray for them. Appreciate that. And you pray for our college students. I was talking to Corey and Chrissy back there this morning. They were they're heading back the end of this week back to Pensacola, and Nathan will be heading back again on Wednesday. And you pray for Scott Page. He's a new husband. Yeah, and so you pray for him and Miss Teresa, and the Lord will bless them. And so we got some good things. I asked Nathan if he would preach for us before he headed back to college, and you pray for them, for him. This is his last semester, and he's done well, but now he needs to know what the Lord wants him to do. So you pray the Lord will direct him where he'd have him to serve, and I appreciate that. Nathan, give us what the Lord's got on your heart.
Praise the Lord. Open your Bibles to Luke chapter 10. Book of Luke chapter 10, we're going to be in verse 38. I appreciate the opportunity to speak again tonight. And it was funny because he asked me to do the announcements the other week after Christmas. And to be honest, I was more nervous doing the announcements than anything else. I don't know why, but maybe it was too formal. But I've enjoyed being able to be here back for the break and to be with you all again, and many people have already, again, informed me that they'll be praying for me as I'm out, and I do very much appreciate that. Luke chapter 10. I was thinking the other day that, you know, I preached a little bit more, but you always know when you first hear a person preach, you never know what you're going to get. You're always wondering what they're going to hear, you know, what they're going to be like, but after you hear them a couple times, then you know what's going to come when they come up to speak. But I didn't really think that would ever be true for me because I'm not really old enough. I don't have enough experience to really have a preaching style. At least that's what I thought. But I remember I was out this summer and my partner, Ryan, started to make fun of me for the way that, not in a bad way, I just have these little mannerisms that he started to do. And then he got all my teenagers that I was with the rally starting to do it while I was preaching. It really threw me off the whole time. I have this thing, apparently, when the podium's on the ground that I walk, like, around it in circles over the course. And they, like, gave me, it was seven times this message, seven times around. It's like, oh, that's great. And so I thought maybe I should change my preaching style. So I thought about really good preachers that I know. So I thought maybe Brother Sam's, he's been here a couple times. Maybe I'll preach like him. I'll be really loud and adamant about everything, and then I'll tilt my head just a little bit to the left, and everybody think I'm good. But or maybe I'll preach like my vice president at my college, Dr. Shetler. He's very excited about everything that he does, and he hops a little bit while he preaches. So I thought maybe I'll preach like him, but. And then I thought, well, or I could do dad, and then every once in a while just kind of lift my jacket up like this and do that. But I thought, I don't know, maybe I'll just stick with what I always do. But to be honest, everybody has things that they're known by. If I said to you, good evening, I have a question to ask you, I think, Mr. Russell. If I was to say, who says the most amens here, I'd probably say Miss Jerry. If I said, who makes the best meatballs, I wouldn't say anybody, because then I'll get in trouble for that. So everybody has little things that they're defined by. And the things that they do and the things that they say often define a person. And it's also true in the Bible. There's several things that we know about specific people. And if you were to say something, you could define somebody, or you could pick out somebody in the Bible. Out of the thousands of characters in the Bible, you could pick out one individual because that's what they're known by. You said the strongest man in the Bible, you'd say Samson. You say the man who was fed to the lions, but he was set free, Daniel. Man after God's own heart, David. Why? Because there's things that they had in the relationships that they had with God and things that they did that defined their life. But usually those are the people that are the most prevalent people in the Bible. But there's even smaller characters. My first message I preached here was on Enoch. And my last point of my message was, in order to walk with God, it has to define you. Because it was going through his genealogy, that was how it described his life. Because that's what he did. But today I notice a different character in Luke chapter 10. a girl named Mary. The interesting thing about Mary is that she is not a major Bible character at all. When you look through it, even the Bible says more things about Enoch than even about Mary. The more things that Enoch said than Mary. Mary, in all the times that it mentions this one at least, she only says one phrase in the entire Bible, but yet we seem to know her. And when I look at Mary's life, the thing that I define her as is, whenever I see her, she's in many different stories. She's doing several different things. And honestly, I've heard a message on all three of the times that Mary's mentioned. But every single time you see Mary, she's defined by being at Jesus' feet. Never is she ever mentioned where she does not end up at his feet. But in relation to Jesus, where are you? Are you at his feet? Or do you never seem to be found there? And from the life of Mary, I noticed three defining characteristics of those that sit at Jesus' feet. The first one is in Luke chapter 10, verse 38. And those that sit at Jesus' feet, first of all, will listen when others do not. Verse 38. It says, now it came to pass as they went that he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving, and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her therefore that she help me. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things. But one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. The person who was listening to Jesus was Mary. But when you look at the very first line, the very first verse, the one who invited Jesus into the house was Martha. Had it not been for the servant spirit of Martha, Jesus would never have ended up there. And she was responsible for taking care of all the little things that needed to be done when you have a guest. She fed him, she brought him food, and she brought him water, and she did things that were good. And in Jesus' rebuke to Martha, he doesn't rebuke her for serving. It says that she was cumbered about with much serving. And that word cumbered means distracted. She was distracted with her serving. It wasn't bad that she was doing things for Jesus. In fact, if it wasn't for her, they would have never met her. But she had allowed it to get in the way. And while she was doing things that were good, there was things that Jesus wanted her to know. There was things that Jesus was trying to tell her, and she was missing it. But Mary was listening at his feet. I was at college 2 years ago when I first started working on Blue Crew. I had never been a leader by nature. And so I was a supervisor for my first year in Blue Crew, and it was a little bit different for me because I was in charge, and that was not usual for me. My responsibility was I was in charge of the main school building Saturday and Sunday, and it was my responsibility to make sure it was clean and set up for Sunday, and then clean and set up for Monday for classes, which all kinds of stuff changed around. And it wasn't unusual for us to work during the second service on Sunday morning. They had an 8:30 service and an 11 o'clock service. And sometimes something had to be set up immediately after the 11 o'clock service, and so we would work during it so that it would be ready afterwards. Well, this particular day, there was a big banquet in the Revels building, which is one I was in charge of. And my boss told me to go over there and set up 103. And 101 was going to be a serving room. Now, because that was true, they were going to move a whole Sunday school class. And so he gave me all the instructions, and I said, okay. And then I went over to the Revels building, and I tried to get everything done as fast as I could, because I was trying to make sure it was all good. I was new. I didn't want to mess anything up, and so I was trying my best. Well, I walked into 103 where the banquet was, and there were still people from Sunday school. So I thought, okay, I'll set up 101. And so I go in there, and there was nobody there. Great. So I take all the tables down. I put them all to the side of the room. I get my helpers with me. I'm moving all the chairs around. I put all the tables up. I put the tarp down because that's where we're going to be having all the food. And then all of a sudden, some of the Spanish ministry comes in, and they ask me why I'm in the room. So my first thought was I must not have gotten communicated to them. They were supposed to be moved. I was supposed to be in here. So I told them, and I said, well, I was under the impression you were moved to the North Auditorium. And they said, well, I don't think that's right. Why don't you call your boss? I said, okay. They don't know, but I'll call my boss. So I called my boss. And I asked him if what everything was supposed to be, and he reaffirmed whatever it is that I asked him, and I told them they were supposed to be in the North Auditorium. Well, they were upset because they were supposed to have Sunday school, but I thought they must just not have gotten the memo. My boss came over after finishing what he was supposed to do, and he got there and he asked me why 103 wasn't set up. And I told him, well, there were still people in there. And then he asked me why 101 was set up. And I said, well, that's what you told me to do. I said, no. He said, that was supposed to have Sunday school. You were supposed to set up 103, and that's supposed to be done 10 minutes ago. And so I had switched it, and I had done everything that I thought I was supposed to be doing, and I was working really hard. But I didn't listen. And it cost me something. And there was something very important I was supposed to know. And even though I was working very diligently at everything I was supposed to be doing, I was missing what I was supposed to learn. And I was missing what I was supposed to know. And so oftentimes in our life, we get very cumbered about doing good things. But he said to Martha that Mary chose the needful part. Mary chose the thing that was needed. The reason that we need to serve and do all these things, the reason that she needed to do all that was so that Jesus could come to their house. But the purpose of Jesus coming to their house was so that they could listen to what he had to say. If he wasn't going to talk to them and teach them anything, there was no reason for her to serve. But because she was so distracted with all the other stuff, she missed it. But during your service, are you listening? During everything that you get very cumbered about with, very troubled with, do you still find the time to get to his feet? And we do a lot. Oh, I was on the bus ministry, I knocked on this many doors, and I brought in this many kids, and I'm doing all these things for these people, and I'm going to the nursing home, and I'm working with these people so that I can go visit them. And why isn't anyone helping me? Why aren't they doing it too? Because sometimes you need to stop and find your way to his feet. And Mary was listening when others weren't. But turn over your Bibles to John chapter 11. The second time you see Mary is in this chapter. And we see that those that sit at Jesus' feet will listen when others do not. And they will trust him when others cannot. Verse number 1, John chapter 11. It says, now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus, of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. And it was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped her feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sister sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And when he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Jump over to verse 17. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. And many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary sat still in her house. I imagine this scene. Mary has now had her first chance to meet Jesus. Martha was worried about all the things that she was trying to take care of him and be a good host, but she was distracted by it. But Mary had a chance to sit and listen to his words. Oh, Martha, if you could have just stopped and listened to what he said. Oh, if you could have heard the things he was trying to tell me. it made me realize who he was. And then a couple of weeks later, Martha comes to Mary and she says, "Mary, Lazarus isn't feeling very well today. Oh, that's a shame. Well, why don't you take him some soup and some tea and maybe he'll feel a little better." "Okay, well, I will." "Hey, Mary, Lazarus is doing a lot worse. Really, I don't know what's wrong with him. There must be something that I don't really know. He should have been feeling better by now, but he's not. What do you think we should do?" "Maybe we should call Jesus." "Well, what's Jesus going to do?" "No, you didn't listen to him like I listened to him. He'll heal her. He'll do that for us. Oh, Jesus is so powerful. Jesus is so great. If you knew him like I knew him, you'd know he'd be willing to do that." "Hey, Mary, why isn't Jesus here yet?" "Well, I don't know. But it's fine. Jesus knows now and he'll come. Don't worry. Trust me. He'll be here." "Hey, Mary, Lazarus is gone. Why didn't he come?" "I trusted him. He told me so many things. It doesn't make any sense. He loved us. He loved Lazarus. Why would it be that when he heard that he was sick, he wouldn't come?" "Hey, Mary, Jesus is here." But Mary sat still in her house. "You go talk to him." "I don't want to. Because it doesn't make any sense." Mary had unmet expectations. She knew a lot about Jesus, and it was indeed true that he was loving. And it was indeed true that he was capable of healing Lazarus, but he didn't. And she expected him to, and those expectations were unmet. And so when he came, her first reaction was not to talk to him. Right before I came back here this semester, I'd been very, very busy. And I had a lot on my plate, and it was slowing down a little bit. But my flight was supposed to leave at, I think it was 8:30, no, 9:30 in the morning. Whatever it was, I was supposed to leave campus at 6 in the morning to make my flight. I had a guy lined up who was supposed to drive me over. And I was already getting a little upset about the fact that I wasn't going to be able to see Samantha for about another month until she came here. And so she said, "Don't worry about that. I'll get up. We'll get up early. I'll see you about 5 o'clock in the morning. We'll spend a little bit of time together before you have to go. And then I'll send you off." And I said, "Okay, I appreciate that." I thought that was really early, but she was willing to do it. So I said, "Great." Well, I had been packing all my stuff up. I'd been getting everything together. I'd been packing everything. I'd been putting some of my stuff back in the closet. Some of the things I usually live with, I was all kind of away and kind of out of place. And so I didn't plug my phone in to the normal spot that I do. My lamp had a little plug in the top. And so I plugged my phone into there. It buzzed at me, and I thought it was fine. Turned off the lamp, and I went to bed, set to get up at 4 in the morning so I could get ready, get my stuff together, see her at 5, leave at 6. Something happened in the middle of the night. I don't know what it was. Maybe my lamp doesn't work. Maybe I shouldn't rely on a plug inside of a lamp. I don't know, but my phone did not charge, so my alarm did not go off. And I hear a knock on my window at 6:10, 10 minutes after I was supposed to leave. I jump out of bed. I go over to my phone. I click on the button, and it doesn't do anything. And then I realize, oh, no. And so then I go over to my watch, and it says 6:10. Not only was I supposed to leave 10 minutes ago, but my girlfriend had been sitting, waiting for me at 5 o'clock in the morning for an hour. We'll be handing out small sticks to all the ladies that they can beat me with on the way out. I felt just about this big, but I didn't know what to do. I had to leave. A friend of mine came in, and he helped me get all my stuff. We threw it in the car, and we left. And she was very forgiving, and I appreciate that very much. But to be honest, it did upset her. But wouldn't that upset you if you were waiting for somebody for an hour at 5 o'clock in the morning and they never showed up? Because I could complain to her and say, why were you upset? I've never been at your dorm at 5 o'clock in the morning any other day. The only difference was, this time, I had promised it to her. And I failed to meet a promised expectation. But wouldn't it have been completely unreasonable for me to come to her one day and say, where were you? What do you mean, where was I? I expected you this morning. Why? I never told you that I would be here. Any other day, it would have made no sense. But it was when I promised her. But sometimes we do that exact same thing to God. I expected that from you. Why? It was something that I had never promised. You told me everything was going to be easy. You told me it was never going to be hard. You told me I wasn't going to have any problems. You told me when I fixed my life, my family would fall in order. And he looks at you and he says, I never promised you that. And sometimes we can fail to trust God because we have unmet expectations. And he looks at us and he says, beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trials that should try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. And we can fail to trust God because we have unmet expectations. But what happens is Martha comes to Jesus and she says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother had not died. He has a conversation with her, and at the end of the conversation, she says, yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, who should come into the world. And so some people believe, some commentators say, well, there, she was saying that she put her trust in God. And that's what it appears to be. But then when Jesus comes to the tomb and he tells them to roll away the stone, Martha's the one that says, but it's been 4 days. By now, he stinketh. So apparently she didn't actually trust in what he was going to do. She had an academic understanding of who Jesus was without a practical trust in what he was going to do. Martha, though, comes back to the house and says to Mary, the master is here. And he wants to see you. And Mary comes, and what does she do? She falls at his feet. And she says, get this, Lord, if you had been here, my brother had not died. She asked the same question that Martha did. Did Mary love Martha less? Did Mary love Lazarus less than Martha? No. Did Mary understand more than Martha? No. But when she came to Jesus, in the middle of a trial that neither one of them understand, she fell at his feet and acknowledged that he was in control. Did she ever understand? Maybe after the whole thing was over. There was no indication of any of that. And though she was sitting at his feet before, didn't mean that she understood the circumstance anymore while it was happening. And sometimes in our life, we are doing everything we're supposed to be doing. We look at our life and we're constantly trying to grow. We're constantly trying to change so that we're more like Christ. But as far as we know, we're doing everything we're supposed to be doing. And something comes into our life that we do not understand. And it makes absolutely no sense. And we really feel like Jesus would have done it differently. And though we might have the same questions that everyone else has, we can still come to him by falling at his feet. And the ones that sit at his feet will trust him when others do not. Because we don't understand what he's doing. After that whole thing, he said it was for his glory, and they were able to see more of who God was because of it than if he had changed it the way that they thought. Yesterday, Sam and I and Olivia, her best friend, we all went to Philadelphia, Miss Jerry, and we went there, and none of us had ever been there before. And so we took our GPS. I don't like my GPS. It's old and it takes me a really weird way. And Olivia, she had a newer GPS that she said she'd use. And I said, okay. And her GPS was really cool. It did a whole lot of different things. The first thing it asked me was whether or not I wanted to avoid toll roads. And I said, yes. So it took me a different place, a different way. But one of the cool features that I've seen GPS do all kinds of cool things. On the way to the airport, my friend, his GPS would tell you how much traffic there was, depending on what color the road was. I thought that was really cool. So you could see when it would stop and end. Maybe your GPS does this, but hers, when it would see down the road, it would have a traffic or an accident or something like that, it would ask you if you want to change your route and then tell you roughly how much time you're going to save. So it'll beep at you and say, you can save 9 minutes as you change your route. And I said, okay, because I don't know where Philly is, so it doesn't really matter to me which way we go. So I would say yes, and then I said yes again. And one time I was going down the road, I was getting to the bottom of a hill, and I was supposed to make a right at this light. And it was one of those ones where it says make a right, and there's three rights, and so you want to really pay attention that you're going the right way. So I turned on this road, and then as soon as I turned on it, it asked me if I wanted to change my route. So I was figuring it was going to take me farther down this road, and then I was going to go a different way than original. But as soon as I pressed yes, it told me to make a U-turn. I was like, why am I going to go over here if you're going to change me and pull me back over here? I started to complain about it. I said to Olivia, "This, I don't know what your GPS is doing to me. It's taking me all over in circles. And next time it asks me if I want to change my route, I'm going to say no." And she told me this, "Nathan, you don't know what's down the road. So when it tells you to change what you're doing, even when it doesn't make sense, you should listen." And so sometimes when we're going down our road and something makes absolutely no sense, we say, next time that happens, I'm going to say no. Next time that happens, I'm not going to listen because it doesn't seem like it's taking me anywhere good. But we don't know what's down the road. We don't know what might be going on and what God might be using in order to take us where he wants us to go. But we won't ever get there if we're not listening when others do not, and if we're not trusting him when others cannot. But lastly, turn over the page if you have to, John chapter 12. Those that sit at Jesus' feet will give him what others will not. John chapter 12, verse number 1. It says, "And then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag, and bare what was put therein. Then said Jesus, let her alone. Against the day of my bearing hath she kept this. For the poor always ye have with you, but me ye have not always. Much people, the Jews, therefore, knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he raised from the dead." This is also one of the stories that we may have heard many times. They're having a feast. They're having a dinner. Martha's serving. And it was fine, because it's good to serve. And he wasn't yelling at her. Maybe she was listening this time, and she wasn't before. I don't know. But she was serving. Lazarus was sitting at the table. He'd raised him from the dead. And Mary comes in, took a pound of ointment, spikenard, very costly. She broke it, and according to the other gospels, she poured it on his head and then on his feet. The whole room was filled with the odor of it, and then she wiped his feet with her hair. She gave him something that she had that was very costly. She gave of her worth. Very much. Spikenard, many people try to figure out what, everyone knows that it's costly. It says it was costly here, but when you look in history, spikenard was extremely expensive. We always say that it would probably have cost about a year's worth of wages for the amount of ointment that she had. And she gave it all to Jesus. When other people looked at her, they said, "Why would you do that? You could have used that for something else." But to her, the most beneficial thing she could have done with that was just to give it to Jesus. The most beneficial thing that she could have done with that was actually just to pour it at his feet. Some people say that spikenard was an ointment that they would often put a drop of on their guest's head when they came in, which means that when she was to get rid of that bottle, she was getting rid of something that was not only costly, but useful, and something that she often used and she would have to then replace. So it was an everyday sacrifice that she gave to him. And she was willing to do that. Other people looked at her life. Other people looked at what she was doing, and they said, "That makes no sense that you would do that." But I can only imagine in her mind that she would say, "Now, if you understood who Jesus is to me, if you understood what he said to me, if you understood how I felt about him, you'd realize that this is not a sacrifice. We need to give of everything that we have to him." And so often the things that God has blessed us with, we are so afraid to give to him because it just might cost us too much. But the people that are willing to take the useful things of life, and our first response is not to give it to God, but to use it for almost anything else, are the people who are not sitting at his feet. Who was the one that said that? Judas. Not because he cared for the poor, because he held the bag, and he was a thief. The people who are willing to take the things that God has blessed him with are the ones not because they care for everything else, but because they want to use it for themselves rather than God. She gave of her worth, but she also gave of herself. After she poured it on him, she wiped his feet with her hair. When you read later in the epistles, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11:15, "But if the woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering." The long hair of a woman was given to her for her glory, and she used that to wipe his feet. All of us have something that we could glory in, something that God's given to us for a glory, so to speak. Maybe some of us have a natural gift of teaching. Some of us have a natural gift to speak in front of people. Some of us have a natural gift to work with children or whatever it might be. We have something that we could glory in. But sometimes we're afraid to use it for whatever God might give it to. We're afraid to use it for whatever God might deem fit to use it for. Mary's glory was her long hair, like every other woman. And God used that to wipe his feet with it. And some of us think that there's things that we have that might be different than other people, and things that we have that might be special gifts, but we're afraid to use it for maybe the menial things that God might use it for. I have this gift, but I'm not going to use it for that. That would be a waste of that gift. I have this, and I'm thankful to God for it, but I wouldn't use it for children. That'd be a waste. I have this gift that God's given to me, but I'm not going to use it in the church. That'd be a waste. I've been given so much money, but I'm not going to give it to the Lord's work. That'd be a waste. And how could God possibly require of me to use it for such a degrading thing as that? And so we choose to use it for almost anything else. And yet Mary gave of everything that she had, but she gave of herself and was willing to take who she was and let Jesus use it for whatever he wanted. John the Baptist says, "He must increase, but I must decrease." So when she wiped his feet with her hair, she was fulfilling as much purpose as she thought that she could. and that brought her joy. Romans 12:1 says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, because of everything he's done for you, present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And anything short of a full sacrifice is not the same thing as being reasonable, which means it's unreasonable not to sacrifice everything we have. What is your glory? Are you afraid to give it to him? Do you think that what God might be asking you to do with it isn't special enough? She gave of herself, she gave of her worth, and she gave more than anyone else. But what's cool about this is that she understood more than anyone else. What do I mean? Jesus said, let her alone. They gave her a hard time for the things that she was doing because they didn't understand that their relationship was like that. They didn't understand about how someone could possibly give Jesus that much. And he said, let her alone. Against the day of my burying hath she done this. Now that's important to know because that means that she knew that he was going to die soon. Jesus was not old. There was no natural reason for Jesus to die in the next few days unless she had been listening. Unless she had been listening to his words. But you watch everyone else, they never got it. John chapter 8, we're in John chapter 12 now. John chapter 8, verse 21, 22 says, then Jesus again said unto them, I go my way, and ye shall seek me, and shall die in your sins. Whither I go, ye cannot come. Then said the Jews, will he kill himself? Because he saith, whither I go, ye cannot come. Later in that same chapter, he says, and I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. This he said, signifying what death he should die. And the people answered him, we have heard out of the law that Christ abideth forever. And how sayest thou, the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? John 13, Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, whither goest thou? And Jesus answered him, whither I go, thou canst not follow me now, but thou shalt follow me afterwards. Peter said unto him, Lord, why cannot I follow thee now? Yeah. No one else understood what he was saying because no one else was sitting at his feet. And Mary, someone who was probably never intended to be a major character, probably supposed to end up just being one of the crowd, she decided to sit at his feet, and she understood more than anyone else. Who was the last person that said that? That statement that I said from Simon Peter in chapter 13. Later, after all of this, they still didn't understand. But Mary was willing to give everything she had for something she knew was going to be true because she was listening. And when she was sitting at his feet, she was understanding more than anyone else. Sometimes we look at people in the church, we wonder how they can seem to have the mind of God more than other people. How they seem to know a little bit more about what God might be doing. How they seem to just trust him more often, how they seem to just be able to follow where he might be leading us, and it doesn't make any sense to me, and I don't know how they can possibly understand the Bible the way they do. I don't know how they could possibly understand a relationship and prayer like they do, but the reason that they do is because they were sitting at his feet. She gave him more than others in this passage. She understood more than others, and she was able to serve more than others. The next chapter over, Jesus comes, gathers all his disciples around, and he gets a towel and he girds himself. He brings them all around and he washes their feet. And they all ask him why he's doing that, and he says, I'm giving you an example of what you need to do to other people. I'm giving you an example of how you should serve other people. But when you read that passage, none of them got a towel, none of them got a bowl. None of them washed Jesus' feet. But in those surrounding chapters, the only one who washed Jesus' feet was Mary. Some of us might think that's not really that much of a privilege. What a little thing to do. But Mary had opportunity to serve Jesus in a way that no one else did. She had an opportunity to do things for Jesus that no one else did. But she was able to do that because she was sitting at his feet. Jim Elliot was somebody who was a missionary, very young. He wanted to be a missionary to Ecuador. And he went to the Indians there, but he constantly wanted to go over to the far island where the cannibals were. When you read through a lot of his diary entries, he's often talking about how he wants to give everything to Christ. And if you know the story of Jim Elliot, he eventually did make it to that island, made contact with the cannibals, but he was killed at a very young age. But he was willing to do that because he wanted to sacrifice everything he had for him. He wanted to give him everything he had. And in so doing, Jim Elliot seemed to be able to serve Christ in a way that other people couldn't, by reaching people that nobody else did. And he was able to understand the mind of God, it seemed like, more than anyone else did. He said once, "Is the distinction between living for Christ and dying for him, after all, so great? Is not the second the logical conclusion of the first? Furthermore, to live for Christ is to die daily, as the Apostle Paul put it. It is to lose everything that we may gain Christ, and it is in laying down our lives that we find them." And he was the one that said, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose." And he gave everything he had to Christ. Probably not because of an emotional impulse. Probably not because he was forced to by other people. Probably not because other people coerced him into doing it, but because somewhere along the line in his life, he decided to sit at his feet, and he gave him what others would not. So what about you tonight? Where are you? Have you been sitting at his feet? Have you been listening to his words? Because those that sit at Jesus' feet will listen when others do not. They'll trust him when others cannot. And they'll give him what others will not. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for everything that you have done for us. But Lord, I often wonder if we've truly given to you everything that we have. I often wonder if we're truly listening to what you've trying to tell us. Lord, I pray that tonight you would speak to our hearts and you'd remind us of what you want us to know and help us to stay at your feet.